Thanks for listening to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Crown Peak and Elastic Path and hosted by me, James Gerd. We bring you interviews of industry thought leaders, the C-suite of tech companies and leading retail brands to showcase e-com tech so that you can make better decisions for your business and hopefully discover new technology. All we ask in return is you tell other people about the podcast, spread the good news for us, get us more listeners. And if you're new to the show, give us a rating. You can do that wherever you're listening, or you can go to ratethispodcast.com/replatform. So thanks, and I hope you enjoy the latest episode. So our topic today, we're talking to the CEO of Kibo Commerce on product strategy, marketing fit, and the challenges of modern e-commerce. So a warm welcome to Ram Venkatraman. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good, James. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for joining us from Texas. So before we get into the questions about the product and the strategy and what you're seeing in the market, there'll be some people who know Kibo, some who don't know much about you. So do you want to give us that like elevator pitch? What is Kibo? What are you doing? You know, where do you fit in the market?
Fantastic. No, thank you. Happy to do that. So Kibo Commerce, we've been in business since 2016. We were founded by a popular private equity firm, one of the largest private equity firms in the world, Mr. Equity Partners. And the kind of core investment theses to creating Kibo Commerce was to build a modern commerce platform that comprised solutions around e-commerce, order management, and subscriptions. Right? That was the kind of the primary goal of it. Kibo as a platform focuses on businesses with GMV greater than what, 20 or 25 million down to probably a couple of billion dollars. That's kind of our core market area. So some may say mid-market to the lower end of the enterprise. You know, everybody has a different connotation of what mid-market looks like and what enterprise looks like. So that's kind of the range that we participate in. We typically don't go down market below that and try to stay away from, you know, north of that 2 billion mark. And you know, a lot of people get into building their own systems beyond that, and there's enough down market systems below 25 million. So our core area there, e-commerce, OMS, we're a very composable API first platform, that kind of the genesis of what Kibo was in terms of how we kind of thought about it from a product perspective. But unlike some of our, you know, competition in the market, we kind of focus on a broader set of microservices. You know, we focus on services around the classic, you know, search, cart, checkout, catalog, pricing, promotion on the front end part of it. And on the order management stuff, we share the same inventory service, order routing, fulfillment, those types of services. And then subscription has been a recent addition to the product.
Excellent. Thanks for that. That's a nice position for people. One of the questions I like to ask, because it's clearly linked into product strategy and roadmap, is tech leaders' visions and the business vision for e-commerce, because obviously the two are intrinsically linked. So I'd love to hear that. Where does Kibo see the world of e-commerce heading? You know, what are you seeing with the type of businesses you work with? I know you've got a broad range across different verticals. You know, you've got businesses like Jelly Belly, you've got businesses like M&S, you've got B2B companies as well. What are you seeing in terms of technology? What's the change in demand? Where are people headed with their technology stacks?
Yeah, what do you see based on our positioning in the market in general? You know, there's obviously different ways in which people think about digital transformation, right? So, you know, when they think about digital transformation from a technology perspective, there's lots of different ways in which one can go solve it, right? So obviously there are players out there in the marketplace that offer all-in-one suites of systems, right? Typically, maybe monolithic platforms, think of it that way. They share the personalization platforms there, the CDPs there, the search is there, e-commerce, all of those things are all bundled together in one platform. Some even bigger that even drop an ERP into the system, right? So those types of platforms and solutions out there that kind of think about all-in-one suites and monolithic platforms. Then there are certain customers that they think about best of breed, right? I want to build the best e-commerce platform. I want to get the best order management. I want to get the personalization, but the best CDP. And then there is the brave new world, if you will, in some ways, which is the composable solution, right? I want to get bits and pieces of different solutions. I might get cart and checkout from one person. I might get a PIM from another player, or a search and inventory and fulfillment and order routing. All of these things are bits and pieces of all of those things that come in specifically to kind of develop that solution. So where we see our customers, our primary customers are ones that kind of fit more into that, hey, how do I do best of breed and how do we do composable? More and more customers that we see in the marketplace, B2C or B2B, right? Both of those use cases are heavily going down to the composable route in terms of buying these pieces and really kind of assembling the right pieces for them. How Kiva participates in their journeys, we want to meet these customers in that specific journey that they're in. Right? Some customers want to buy best of breed. We can offer them e-commerce or order management capabilities or subscription capabilities, or people want composable pieces. You know, the famous word out there, Gartner's evangelized the PBCs, package business capabilities. We offer them package business capabilities, universal cart and checkout, or get our order routing and our inventory management capabilities, our search capabilities, so on and so forth. So we're seeing more and more customers going down the composable path, even down market. I think that's been the interesting trend that we've seen. The mid-market customers are seriously thinking about, hey, how do we future-proof our transformation? A lot of times people think of these big bang solves, like they go into these, you know, 12, 18-month exercises, replace their existing platforms, e-commerce or OMS or subscriptions, and then they come out and they're like, okay, now we got to think about it again in 5 years. So we constantly talk about future-proofing the digital transformation and thinking about the composable graph.
Crown Peak, enabling organizations to build meaningful digital experiences for everyone, everywhere. Engage your customers with our content management system. Reach your entire audience with our digital accessibility and quality tools, and grow your brand with our product discovery solution. Find out more at crownpeak.com.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a discussion a few weeks ago about that I'm definitely seeing it from a consultant point of view, that there are a few people talking about this, like lift and shift, big bang, re-platform, with a view that, okay, we need to get a 3 to 5 year monetization out of it, then we'll redo it. And thankfully, from having telling people that that's not the right approach and you shouldn't be thinking about replacing it in another 3 to 5 years, is they're rethinking philosophically what the role of e-commerce is within a wider tech stack, which I guess is, I've never liked the term composable. I have to say, I think it's the wrong term. I think strategically it's the right path. I've always thought composable doesn't quite nail it, because the words that I always hear from people is like flexibility, and that it's that ability to change quickly, isn't it? So I definitely feel that we've seen that live in the UK too.
So we actually use a term with our customers, and I won't take credit for this phrase. We call it evolution versus revolution. And that seems to resonate well with business leaders. Hey, you got to evolve your tech stack.
Yes.
There's no revolution possible here, because by the time you go through that process, you come out of it and another revolution kicks in. So evolve your tech stack, and as you evolve your business, and that seems to make a lot more sense from a business perspective. From a tech audience perspective, yes, composable is a concept that they probably understand, but the business leaders really resonates well with the evolution concept versus the revolution concept.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, because evolution doesn't give the fear that people have of, oh Christ, if I try and make a change, it's going to cost me hundreds of thousands to unpick all that interdependency. So let's link the two, because that's the strategic vision where you guys are focused on what your customers are demanding. But now let's flip that into like your product strategy. So we'd love to hear, because product roadmaps evolve, product focuses change over time. What's the current philosophy and strategic focus for Kibo around the product roadmap and where you're headed?
Yeah, so just stepping back, maybe how we think about product roadmaps here at Kibo is that we go through this very strategic exercise every year, right? It's not something we say, here is a 3-year vision, and here comes the roadmap, and we're executing down the path for 3 years, right? I think the nature of commerce is evolving so fast that anybody who says they have a view of the world 2 years from here or 3 years from here probably is lying to us, generally, if you think about it that way. So how do you think about it is that we take a tremendous amount of, we go through a tremendous amount of very logical process. Customer feedback is a huge part of our roadmap process. Typically, we average between 60 to 70% of our product features go into the roadmap come from customers. Analyst feedback is a huge part of how we think about our roadmap. We think about partners, both SIs as well as tech partners who we work with, is a large part of our feedback that goes into it. And then obviously, we spend time with competition as we think about that. And then there is a large layer of our own internal innovation, right? So if you think about e-commerce and OMS in the same platform, that's an innovation from Kibo. Nobody else does it in the marketplace. There are some of our larger competitors, without taking names, have tried it a few times. It's a hard problem to solve. So if we try to solve, there's some core innovation that we bring in from our platform. So if you think about it, how we split it, 50, 60, 70% of those features today 3 years ago, there was a lot more innovation from within Kibo. But as we have matured as a company, significant parts of our roadmap come from what our customers want to move the platform. One of our core values is client obsession as we think about it. And that's one of the areas that we focus on from a roadmap and a strategy perspective, is to focus quite heavily in terms of what our customers are asking for.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think some of the challenges people have had historically with technology vendors is the focus is on acquisition, not retention, and actually factoring the customer feedback in and keeping existing customers happy is a very sensible way to do it. And also, then you get the benefits of if you have commonality in demand, then it's easier to build once and release out across a multiple client base.
Absolutely. And it's a much better flywheel, if you will. You can keep your... One of the things we are very proud of is our retention rates in the high 90s in terms of how we retain our customers. And that retention rate really helps us grow the business in terms of, you know, when you can retain a customer, word of mouth travels quite well. And it's a way we operate the same way with our partners. And, you know, if you get a chance, we can talk about our go-to-market and our implementation strategy. That's one of the core ways in terms of how we approach the market too.
Cool. Definitely. A couple of ones on features. What would be really interesting? Can you pull out a couple of key things that have dropped this year that were customer driven? That's always really interesting to hear what your customers demand then.
Yeah. So one of the things that we do, and this may be something you may or may not see some of our competition do, is we put a lot of investment into search, right? We've got customers who take our search platform and use it out of the box. You know, it's part of our core commerce offering. Or a set of customers who use, you know, third-party vendors, whether it's Alcolia or Constructor or Bloomreach or any of those platforms. But we've constantly innovated into search. As search has gotten more and more important from a top-of-the-line conversion perspective in e-commerce, this year we launched what we call our neural search or vector search capabilities. So obviously taking advantage of large language models that are out there, being able to do much better natural language processing in terms of what the end users are typing in there, being able to automatically translate that, find the right products, and provide the best relevant products out there. So heavy investment this year that we're seeing a ton of traction with our existing customers and in the market in general with the investment that we made with neural search. The other big area that we focused on, one of the things that we talk about in terms of our product strategy and product roadmap, is heavily focused on customer experience. Right, CX is a big aspect in terms of how we think about it. We don't build technology for the sake of building technology. So from a CX perspective, one of the neat things that we're able to do with e-commerce and OMS in the same stack is to be able to really focus on bringing the inventory from the supply chain up to the front. You know, it's one thing is to say, I'm going to take an order out there, check it out, and then figure out I don't have product in the supply chain or not available in the right warehouse. So how do we bring that forward upfront in the checkout or buying experience, right? So we released two or three very interesting capabilities to our inventory system this year. One is around, you know, what we call soft allocations. So when you put a drop of product in the cart or through the checkout process, it can allocate in a warehouse and allocate in a store. That's one interesting thing. So now you can be very, very sure that as it goes through the fulfillment process, you definitely have the capabilities and the product to be ship to the customer. The second thing that we did is what we call visibility into future inventory, right? So again, through the checkout process, product's not available today, but it's available 3 days from now. It's available a week from now. Can I deliver that product and deliver accurate fulfillment dates? So again, another big innovation that we made on inventory system that allows our e-commerce customer now to be able to say, okay, can I provide high levels of visibility into what the fulfillment dates are and what the future fulfillment dates are. So we've added the capabilities actually taking even POs in our inventory system to be able to say, okay, there's something in transit 2 weeks from now, it can be delivered to you, Mr. Customer. Here's an accurate fulfillment date for delivery for you. So lots of different things. Again, we come from the mindset of CX versus the times of purely from capable of adding features. All of these three things that I just mentioned significantly improve the customer experience and the buying experience for those customers.
Elastic Path is on a mission to break through the barriers that prevent commerce leaders from delivering extraordinary shopping experiences. Both business and tech teams are able to innovate on their own terms, fully embrace composability, and in turn, never compromise on what's possible. Learn more at www.elasticpath.com.
Yeah, It's interesting to hear that, actually, because there's a few businesses that I know who've focused not exclusively, but mainly around the whole stock management piece this year, because they've had historical issues where people couldn't get enough stock during COVID. Then people had too much stock afterwards, and then tried to get the right balance and trying to get that availability. So it's interesting to hear you say that your customers are being focusing a lot on that as well. It makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Because there's nothing worse for a customer than having an item that can't be fulfilled.
Absolutely.
One question I've got there, and it's no podcast right now is complete without a question on AI. And it seems quite topical with what's been going on at OpenAI as well recently. How much demand are you getting from your customers to bake stuff into a platform versus actually they just want your platform to be able to connect to existing AI engines?
Yeah, it depends on which side of the platform we talk about, right? On the e-commerce side, they want us to plug in more into technologies because there's a ton of innovation going on in that space. We do offer some capabilities, the whole, you know, neural search or vector search that we talked about. Conceptually, from that angle, is AI being baked into it? We leverage, obviously, a lot of innovation from, you know, the open source community in terms of how we leverage it. There's another big area that customers are pushing us to do, which is demand forecasting, especially from a commerce perspective, right? I think a lot of demand forecasting that is out there is focused more on historical data, right? Hey, what was it like a year from now? What was the promotion at that time? Can we forecast demand? What was the, if you're a retailer, talk to me about how many people walked in and bought this in the store, et cetera, et cetera. What we're trying to really innovate on is also using the web signal, right? It's like, can I predict demand now that James is actually shopping for a certain product in a certain part of the country online, and he's gone there 3 or 4 times to be able to see that? And if there is a bigger set of people available in the PDP page and the PLP page, or even put it in the cart, is there a higher propensity to buy? And will you have the right type of inventory available to fulfill that? So we're trying to work on a problem that haven't seen other people work on from a AI perspective or a machine learning perspective, is how do we bring in web demand into demand forecasting? So that's a new area for us. We've been at it for the last 12 or 18 months trying to figure that out. We pretty feel like we'll be able to launch a product next year where we'll have those things baked into the core inventory forecasting system that is there in Kiva.
Interesting. I know you were talking a bit earlier about go-to-market. I think that'd be really interesting to talk about as well, is how do you do this? Because there's such a different approaches from different vendors. Some will only go through agencies and they might have a massive agency pile, or others are selective and only have a handful of qualified agencies, versus others who do their own builds but also have partners. So how does Kibo approach this, and does it vary from territory to territory?
No, okay. So from an implementation perspective or a build perspective, we're 100% partner focused or agency focused, right? We don't do any development ourselves. Historically, Kibo had about, if you look back 18 months ago, we would do our own implementations and builds, and then you'd bring in partners just in case sometimes. And again, it was a hit or a miss, depending. We didn't have a very consistent strategy. About 18 months ago, we decided to 100% pivot towards a partner or agency-based approach to doing all our bids, right? So one of the big levers for us or vectors for us is focusing our go-to-market strategy and co-selling with our partners, right? So that's one part in terms of how we grow. We do, in addition, have our own direct way of going after clients in the market in terms of from a go-to-market perspective. So we kind of split on both ends. We have a direct team of sellers and a whole marketing team that focuses on building pipeline and closing business direct with customers. And then we also co-sell with our partners. And we're very, very selective too in terms of who the partners are and how much they're actually involved in it. Depending on the type of client, we're a little more upmarket. So we've had some large GSIs who work with us in terms of implementing and co-selling with us. But since we also have, you know, customers in the lower end of the market, we've got tier two and tier three partners that work with us. So it's a mixed bag on the agency side, if you will.
And now, that's interesting that you've pivoted. What was the main driver for that? Was it a specific issue or opportunity you're trying to address? Or was it just because focus is elsewhere?
I think it's a question is key focus. You know, it's hard for a software company that thrives on innovation, and we really software at a minimum 26 times a year. There's a published calendar. We push software constantly. Sometimes we go faster than that. But it's hard for a company to do all of these things well, right? So we wanted to really focus and say our job, our purpose here as Kibo is to build software, not to implement software, because it takes a different level of skill set to be able to do that. And fundamentally around change management, right? There's a lot of technical aspects of in implementing and doing a build out for a client, but there's a significant aspect of change management, managing that customer, working through their specific changes in their business. And we didn't feel like we were good at doing that really well, right? And we could do an okay job, and most of the time hit or miss. So we felt like, let's focus on one thing and do it really well and bring along partners who really knew how to do that well and engage them in that process and support them in that process. So we put a lot of investment in partner enablement. That's one of the things we pride ourselves. We don't charge our partners for certification or training. It's all free and asynchronous for our partners online. Certification is free. We offer free enablement as they come on board. So there's a ton of work and investment we make in terms of making sure our partners are successful. And I think that's a better model for us, you know, even in the short term, midterm, or definitely long term as we think about scaling the business.
And has that had any kind of cultural implications? Because I'd imagine that people who are delivering projects for clients, you build up relationships and you also take ownership, and then letting that control go to be entirely dependent on SIs. Has there been a bit of an adjustment for people to adapt to actually that's not our core role and we should be providing value around?
You're talking from a Kibo perspective, right? Or from a partner's perspective.
It's interesting because then you don't have the direct control, do you, over the delivery? So the agency's responsible, even though you can influence. So how does the business find that pivoting and not having that direct control of it?
Yeah, so we do two things. And again, this may be different than a lot of our competition out there. We always stay engaged through the implementation. So there's at least a little bit of our one or two people or a few hours through the implementation, depending on the size of the implementation, purely from an architectural governance perspective. So we stay engaged in the project with the partner, work with them and the customer to make sure that the implementation goes well. The second part that we have is Kibo provides a free customer success manager for all our customers, no matter who they are, small, medium, large, doesn't matter how big they are, right? So our customer success team is always engaged with customer alongside our partner, right? So that relationship with the customer, from our perspective, to your point, you know, for us to be really successful long term and get that high retention rate, we've got to maintain that relationship with that customer. So our customer success team engages, we have a little bit of ours or a fractional resource engagement from an architectural perspective, make sure purely from a partner perspective, make sure they have the right type of support through the project and through the implementation. So for us, it's a joint relationship with the partner. It doesn't mean like the partner is the only one that has a relationship, but our success team kind of maintains that business relationship from a Kibo perspective.
Yeah, I think that's important. The most successful projects I've worked on is where there is a technical lead from the vendor, technical lead from the agency, who are helping the client to make the best decisions. Because let's face it, no project's 100% smooth running. There's always compromises to make. But you can't make the right compromise if you don't have a like blended and like rounded viewpoint over the impact.
Absolutely. And sometimes you need product. You know, this again, back to our roadmap conversation. There might be, you know, people think commerce is the same. There's so many nuances in commerce. And you're trying to bring the customer's unique differentiation onto the platform. And as extensible as, you know, most platforms are these days in terms of, we pride ourselves on our extensibility a lot. You know, there's always those edge cases that need to get involved. So a lot of times the success team will bring in our product organization through that implementation process and say, hey, this is unique use cases that are a way to add to that roadmap. So as we think about our 12-month roadmap, right, every 90 days we revisit it, right, to say, okay, is there something new that we've learned? Do we need to make and change it? And then we go through that process after a 12-month phase. And then every 90 day we relearn and redo our roadmap from that perspective.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yes, gone are the days where a roadmap is published and left because the world changes so quickly in technology.
So quickly, yes.
Another question for you, which is around the challenges that you and Kibo faced, you know, this year, end of last year, coming to this year specifically, we talked about this before we start recording it. Obviously, there's tough macroeconomic conditions impacting lots of people, lots of businesses, whether it's people's spending power, the impact of high interest, you name it. It seems like it's been a bit of a chaotic year and lots of external situations. What are the key challenges that you're facing, like, and how do you steer a company through a period like that?
Yeah, it's actually the hardest bit is the employees, right? I think that's the bit that I think people forget. It's been a tough year. We tried really, really hard to continue to invest. And one of the big advantages that I have as a CEO of this business is that being owned by private equity, we're not a business that grows at all costs. So as we got into this thing, we were very, very careful at really profitable and responsible growth, if you will, right? So I think that's the key part for us is that we're not looking to chase, you know, give me 80% growth or give me 90% growth. And that's great for certain types of businesses. They burn a lot of cash and then they lay off a bunch of people. And then, you know, they're back in that cycle. So our philosophy has been, hey, responsible growth. So we've been obviously watching, you know, the market trends for a while, and being owned by a large PE firm like Vista, we get to learn from, you know, 80 or 90. I have 70 or 80 different CEOs that I talk to constantly in lots of different other vertical domains, not just commerce, and understand from them in terms of, hey, what are the things that you're seeing in your market from a macroeconomic perspective across the globe, right? And then there is softness in certain parts of the globe, and maybe you overinvest in other areas. So for us, it's not been that difficult in terms of the business in general, largely because we have the support structure in place and the fundamental governance of how Kibo is run. We are not a grow at all cost type business versus, you know, profitable growth is kind of the core mantra for us.
Interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Ram, I've really enjoyed talking to you. I mean, could carry on asking you questions all day because I always find it interesting to hear what's driving technology businesses. But thanks very much. I know that if people go to the website, Kibo runs regular like mini demo sessions. There's multiple sessions you book up. Yeah. I also know that you offer free trials. So anyone whose interest has been piqued by you know, the introduction to Kibo that Ram's given, do go on the site and have a look at the platform in a bit more detail. But Ram, pleasure talking to you. Thanks for giving us your time.
Thank you so much, James. Appreciate it.
And thanks, everyone, for listening, as always. I hope you enjoyed it. Keep your ear open for the next episode. And don't forget to give us that rating before you go. Thanks very much, everyone. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gerd, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.